95.2 FM, cranking all the hits, commercial free. It's live on I-95. What's up? Let's get right into it right now. We are on Interstate 95. That's right, on I-95 at a gas station where I work as gas man. And the show starts right now. This is a doozy. Tony Moschetto is here. I don't even know if he knows that I work here. Wow. Is anyone else seeing this? Tony Moschetto is here at the gas station walking in. Tony is a Boston stand-up comedy legend who I haven't crossed paths with in a while. And it looks like he's got his dog, too. This is wild. Wow. Up. He's coming in right now.
Yeah, can I get 20 on pump number 6? Is that? No
Tony?
Way! No
Dude.
Way! Greg Johnson? Greg Johnson?
Dude, I am
How you doing?
So happy to see you and your dog!
Thank you. We were out in our little, we just came from the dog park.
Amazing, dude. I work here, 6 to 6.
Nice. I didn't, since, wow. Wow. Okay, you sit, lay down. Lay down.
Oh, you're talking to your dog right there?
Yeah.
I thought you were talking to me.
Talking
is
to
your
me.
Dog named Grumbles?
Grumbleshanks.
Is that the best name for a dog?
I love it.
Of all time?
I think it is the best name. It's original. It says he looks like a Grumbleshanks too, you know? He really everyone's like has these like hacky names, you know, like Brady or there's a name Blue. A lot of people name their dogs Blue. I don't know why. There was a dog we took Grumble to we're going away. Me and my girlfriend going away, and we want to put him somewhere to stay for the weekend or whatever, right?
I love your dog.
So we go to this. He's a great dog. So we go to this place, and the lady has this nice little yard, and she's trying to get him acclimated to the other dogs there. There's one big dog. He's like a husky or something, and he rules the roost, you know? And then she has this other little dog named Ralphie, who's like... And Ralphie, all he wanted to do was hump Grumbleshanks.
Oh, my gosh.
And we're like, I don't know if we want to like leave him there for a weekend and have him get like raped, you know, like,
yeah,
by another dog. So we just, I think we're going to pass on that place, or like the last, you know, our last resort.
I think that's fair. I think it's good.
Yeah.
It's good to pass. Yeah. That's a hard pass.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to watch. it's really hard to watch because there's nothing you can do about it, really.
Oh,
it's like
God.
They're animals, and they have to kind of he's got to learn how to fend for himself.
Yeah. How long have you had Grumbleshanks?
A little over a year.
Oh, so was that like pandemic sort of you?
Well, I guess it was the end of the pandemic that we always kind of wanted to get a dog, but it's really hard to get a dog when you go through these animal shelters. He's not like a rescue dog or anything, but I think they've gone overboard. Like they want like character references and they want to like, they, you know what they do? They're like, do you have a yard? Oh yeah. Yeah. They'll Google Earth.
Whoa.
Your address. And they're like, well, you don't have a fence. Well, how'd you know that? Cause they can, they start to, like, I mean, they're really intrusive in a way to, you know, your background, and it's almost impossible to get a dog from a rescue if you're not already like a pet owner.
Yeah, I think I knew somebody that they went and talked to the references, and then they didn't get it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. How much? So, did you pay like $1 million for Grumbleshanks? You don't have to say.
No, no, it wasn't. It was pretty fair. It's pretty fair amount, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's an amazing priceless dog right there.
Grumbleshanks. He is. I wrote a script, and the character is, I got a character named Grumbleshanks.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is it a human or a dog?
No, it's a half poodle, half Sasquatch.
Oh, nice. That sounds like my kind of movie.
Yeah, so. But, hey, so he'll bark at anything coming down the driveway. I think there's a, all right, stop. Sorry about this, Greg.
No, I love it. Are you kidding?
Podcast.
I love it. I know.
He doesn't have the podcast etiquette yet. Hey, we're on the, come on, we're on Greg Johnson's podcast now. It's okay. We could have been having a serious conversation. I could be like talking about it's all right. It's just a neighbor. It's okay. It's not going to hurt you.
That dog is so cute, dude.
He slept in with me today.
Oh my God.
You know?
That sounds like heaven.
He just got a haircut. So you haven't seen him in his fluffiness. Where he's total Grumbleshanks, you know what I mean? Like he's Grumbleshanks, but if you see a picture of him with his full, all his full furred out, you're like, that's a Grumbleshanks right there.
That's what I wanted to say. The last time you and I hung out, I think, was like 2010, and this is so absurd. It was in a cheesecake factory in Illinois.
Oh, that's right. With Gary Gulman. Was Gulman there? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I was working at the Zanies. I was at Zanies, and you guys were working in Chicago as well, but at a different club, right?
Yeah, it was a cavernous club inside a shopping mall.
Oh, wow. Lucky.
Yeah, we were so lucky.
Dude, I remember that. I remember that year because that was, I had a little tour. That was like the first leg of my tour, right? Chicago. And I should have known, right, how it was going to go. By just, I was eating it the whole week at Zany's, like just eating it. And then I go on one of these runs. You know, remember that guy, it was his name's Chris Wild. He did a South Bay comedy, and it was like, you know, like a Dave Tribble, you know, the Tribble run.
Yeah.
Right. It was like that. Right. So I went to Wyoming, South Dakota, and it was Wyoming, South Dakota, and what's the other state? They might have been. Anyway, it was like 8 hours between gigs.
Oh.
That kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And, oh, man, I talk about, oh, talk about a hell run. I walked in Pier, South Dakota. I, like, walked, like, half the audience. I started talking about living at the beach in the middle of... middle of the Wild West, and they were like, what is this? It's my material. It's where I grew up. I'm from the beach. And they're like, I think one guy wanted to fight me. It was crazy.
You're like, who lives near the ocean?
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. It was beautiful scenery, but I remember that. Yeah. And that was like, it started off well, you know, seeing you guys. Yeah, that was great. That's right. I forgot about that.
That was probably the last time I saw you. And it's weird because, yeah, like, I mean, Gulman is a legend. I was opening for him.
Yeah.
And I could have done that for the rest of my life. It's just that it's not feasible. There's no practicality in being like a opening act or a feature act for somebody. I mean, like, for example, that was... him doing me a huge favor, obviously, and I appreciated it, but there's no, like, sustainability to that.
Right.
That was like probably the best weekend of my comedy life. It's like the pressure's off. You're hanging out with Gullman and Tony. I mean, what could be better?
That was talking about cavernous. That Cheesecake Factory. it had like, it was like a museum. It had like different wings.
Yeah, it looks like Caesar's Palace.
Yeah. A little much, you know, guys?
Yeah, I just remember like Gary Goldman wakes me up and he's like, we're going to go meet Tony at a Cheesecake Factory. And I'm like, this is the best day of my life.
That was fun. That was a good time, man.
But you're still working the road. You did some Maine comedy recently, correct?
Yeah, you know, I took some time off, you know.
How's that go? When did you take time off?
I took time off before the pandemic, like maybe 2-3 years before, right? And then right before the pandemic started, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get back at it, you know. And then,
like March 10th, 2020.
I was in LA in February, the end of February, that year. And I was doing some sets out there, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to, you know, when I get back, I'm going to hit it hard, you know? Little did I know, right? we knew. And then, so I just kind of rode with that, right? You know, as everyone did. And then like last summer, I don't know what it was, Greg. I think it's, I missed the, you know, live audience aspect of it, right? And being creative and writing and just having that automatic feedback when you're up there. And so, yeah, I think last August I was officially back, you know. And
that's great.
So, and the thing is, like, what I learned, you know, being away from it, I got less jaded when I wasn't chasing it like I did before. So I was able, now I'm able to enjoy other people. Other comics and not get all, you know.
Yeah.
Before, I think it was just, I think everyone falls into this trap, what becomes competitive, where you want people to fail. You want people to like eat it up there. But now it's different. I can genuinely like enjoy my night and celebrate our craft, you know, and just have fun.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's tricky because I think, maybe you get in a trap of wanting people to fail, but also I find it funnier sometimes when people bomb. So,
oh yeah, I do
enjoy watching people bomb in general.
Well, there's some guys, right? When they bomb, it is the funniest thing in the world. it's the funniest thing to watch because how they react to it. There's a guy, I don't know if you know him. He's kind of more my class, I guess, or when I started out. Guy named Nick Costas. He was probably in L.A. when you started. When you started doing comedy, and this guy Nick was just a legend, man. When he bombed, it was like you wanted him to bomb because the way he, like the stuff he would say, he would turn. he would say to a guy like, "I want to bend you over a stack of tires and fuck you up the ass." Like that was his retort. I want to suck your dick so hard your pee hole come out of your, like just like these like personal,
oh, know, my God,
like stuff like that, like just to name a few, he would that's how he would come at him, and it was just so funny.
Those guys, it's like better for them maybe to bomb too. Some people have such good retorts with the audience, it's like easier for them if they bomb.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
One time I bombed so hard, I was in, and again, this is like the year 2000. I went to Hampton Beach Casino, and I was asked to open up for who else but Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Oh, I was going to say Sha-na-na, but okay. I was waiting for you to say some like obscure like Sha-na-na or like some guy that was like the backup singer to one of the Temptations.
Casey and the Sunshine Band. And wow. I don't know what their fan base is. I mean, at this point, they're all probably you know, kind of in their 60s and 70s, and then too, and they did not take to my 5 minutes of comedy. And it was bad. Like, you wouldn't even think they'd be mean people, but they were on that night. They were not into it.
That's a tough room.
Yeah, and why would you think that me, and I was probably 21 years old, why would you book me?
You weren't even born yet when he was like at his height of the disco era. You know what I mean? Like, you weren't even...
you like. I should not be on the same bill.
Right, you should. Is that a connection, a booking?
Oh, yeah, because, man, the comedy connection would somehow book that. Yeah, wow, you're just reminding me. Oh, my God. Tony, I got to ask you, who do you think of when you think of Boston comedy? Like, other than you and I,
yeah.
Who are the legends,
the legends
of Boston comedy? I want to do a draft with you. Let's do okay. a draft.
All right. I would say
I don't mean to put you on the spot. Well, but if we were going to draft and like we'll just go back and forth, and I don't know. I guess the stipulation being with each of our teams we're going to start a stand-up comedy tour and who's anyway, I don't know. The legends of legends of Boston comedy.
The legends of Boston comedy. That's a great question
because other than you and I. I mean you and I obviously.
Oh, that's a given. That's a given. Yeah. We're the captains of the of our teams, our draft teams.
Are there as many comedians in Boston now as there were 20 years ago? Or is it like there's more because of the internet or there's less?
I would say
scene?
There's just about as many comics, if not more, than there was when you left or, you know, 20 when you started. Definitely more when I started. There's less of a scene because there's no more comedy connection. There's no more club, like a 7-night-a-week club. There's nothing in Cambridge.
Yeah.
You know, there's Knicks, but that's just a shadow of itself and the way they book acts now. You know, I think they book a headliner and the headliner has to bring, set the show up and pay people, whatever, and they get the door, whatever like that. So it's totally a different model nowadays. There's a lot of like little shows popping around, you know, like one nighters, you know, and it's actually, those are pretty good. You just got to kind of get into the loop.
Yeah. How does the big room in the hotel, the Laugh Boston, how does that stay open? I mean, I guess they do well. That's kind of like a comedy connection used to be, right?
Yeah. It's similar, but you know, I think because they get, they're able to book, you know, well-known acts.
Oh my God. But I look at those bills and I'm like, who's well-known? No, I mean, I'm not criticizing that venue. I'm saying like, wow, the world's passed me by. I think a lot of people are on like TikTok and stuff and they get popular that way. That's why I haven't heard of them.
I think you're right. I think it's social media influencers that are comics.
Yeah, do you think a place like that has like a 10-year lease on that room? So it's kind of just like they're just in it to win it. Who knows?
I don't know, man. I mean, I went there once just to see a show.
Wait, I'm laughing because I feel like that place has been around 10 years now, and I love how I've been there once too. I think I've been there once in my life.
I didn't want to go. It was a Christmas gift from my girlfriend's nephew. So
and
like,
that's great because it's now, like,
that, yeah.
To me, you're like a legend, and I just love that a nephew would give you, hey, let's go see, you know, fucking the guy from Guy Code on MTV at Laugh Boston.
Yeah, some guy that got, he has a heckling video that went viral. You know, no one shows anything that's any good, right? It's always like them bombing or getting angry with the audience. Oh yeah, let's go see that guy.
Or sometimes I see it and it's one of their bits and they drop in laughs. So it's just clearly like a laugh track. It's
brutal. Oh really? That's insane.
Anyway, you went to Laugh Boston.
I went to Laugh Boston to see a show. I saw Soder, Dan Soder. There was a guy that was in the middle that was, I forget his name, but he was just like, he was funny. He had really edgy material, and I liked him because of, you know, his material, and kind of reminded me, you know, guys taking risks on stage. It was just really different, you know, so I liked that.
Yeah.
But going back to your the draft.
Oh, yeah. We can get into that.
Legends.
Please. Yeah, I'll give you the first pick. Legends of Boston Comedy.
I'm going to go with...
Stand-up comics.
I'm going to go with a guy that unfortunately passed away, but he was one of the... Definitely a legend. Kevin Knox. I would go with
that guy. Nice.
He was...
Oh, my gosh. I could talk about him forever.
He was the best, man. He was
one of a kind,
that guy.
So memorable and one of a kind. What about Patrice O'Neill? I guess I could draft him as my first pick.
That's a great pick. I was thinking of him too. Because he, I remember one of the earliest times, or maybe the first or second time he was on stage.
Oh,
going
wow.
up there and like bombing.
Amazing. You know,
didn't really have any material at all, but, and then I saw him like a few months later and it was like night and day. He had that Malcolm XXXL joke. Yeah. Right. And it was like, it killed. And he had, and that was kind of like, you know, all, he just needed like a bit. And then he started finding his voice and then he just took off. And I remember like, I gave him a ride. I used to give him rides once in a while around the city, and he was like shitting on me. He's like, how much material do you have? And I was like, honest, I'm like, well, I got 20 minutes that I know works. He's like, you're lazy, man. And he's like, just give me shit. And then he was like, kind of right, you know. He's like, yeah, well, maybe I should have more material.
Oh, that's, you know? So interesting. Yeah, dude, I feel like in like a few years before he died, when he got very famous, there was an article about him in the paper, and like he was like referencing one of the club owners, and then the club owner was quoted in the article still shitting on him. It was like, oh, Patrice always goes over his time. And I just remember being so shocked by that. I'm like, dude, they reached out to you for a quote about this comic, and you're like still talking that he like went long in his sets. I mean, like, it's just a funny thing to reference. I don't know. He never got his due, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, he definitely had rubbed some people the wrong way, you know.
Yeah.
Especially like bookers and other comedians, because he didn't give a fuck what he said, you know. And
yeah.
I think when people said, you know, you go over your time, he's like, well, how else am I going to get stage time in this town?
Yeah, I know.
That was like his response, you know.
And he's not wrong. It's like, sometimes I look back at how diligent I was at getting off stage when they lit me, and I'm like, what was I afraid of? Like, how long do I have? Oh, okay. 7 minutes. Oh, okay.
Did you ever get yelled at by someone because you went over your time? Like,
you know, I probably did. Thank you for asking. I'm sure that I probably did, but I was always such a people pleaser. Nothing really sticks out. I do remember the guy at the club in Cambridge used to get mad just in general that the show would go over because he had certain time constraints. And by the way, you said there's nothing in Cambridge. I saw a GoFundMe for that club because they need 100K to get back on their feet.
Yeah.
And Tony, I noticed that you hadn't given yet.
I haven't given, not yet. I'm waiting a little longer because I want to be the guy that puts him over the top. You know what I mean? I just want to write, you know, when they're like $100 away, I'm just going to give $100 and write, you're welcome. And then see what happens. And then maybe I'll get the first spot in the history of that club. I'm praying that he gets the money, you know what I mean? Because that could be a good thing, but, you know.
It was supposed to open last fall.
I know. Just got delayed in a year or two.
I think if you give $100, honestly, to that GoFundMe, one of the stipulations is you get to perform 5 minutes of comedy. I'm not making that up. I think that was one of the things.
I I gotta look at it. Okay. I wanna.
Anyway, at Legends of Boston Comedy Draft. Right. Now, we haven't put together a show stopping tour yet because both our first picks were no longer with us. But you go ahead. You pick next. Who? Legends of Boston Stand Up Comedy Draft.
Okay. You'd have to go with.
This is really important.
I'm sitting there worried. I'm like, am I gonna yeah. piss anyone off by these names?
Oh, I'm not recording. No.
Okay.
I love. Yeah, I refer to like a club in Cambridge. I'm like speaking in code as if it matters.
Right.
Anyway,
the studio.
There are no famous draftable comedians.
I'm gonna have to go with Dane.
There you go.
Dane Cook. He was one of the guys from like my class, you know, because I hung out with Dane and Patrice and those guys, right?
Yeah.
And he was like the first dude to really to break out, you know, that beside, I guess in my generation, you know, post, you know, Stephen Wright and those guys.
Oh my God.
And those, you know, the Ding Ho, you know, so yeah. I'm going to go Dane.
I mean, Dane was like selling out arenas for like 5 years in a row in the early 2000s.
Yes.
Oh my God. I opened for him at Conti Forum.
Ooh.
At Boston College in an arena.
Nice.
Yeah, that went better than the Casey and the Sunshine.
I was going to say, right? Yeah.
No, that was like Crush City. Although I think two minutes before I was introduced, Dane Train looked me in the eyes and he goes, "No swearing."
He just messing with you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I had about, you know, 7 minutes and it was in my head at that point, like there was going to be no improv. And I think I had one bit where I swore and I thought, I'm going to do it anyway because I don't think he's going to watch me. I got the understanding that, like, if I'm Dane, I might say don't swear because I don't want you to be filthy. But like my act was very PG, you know?
Yeah. There was a guy, Jim Laletta.
Oh, remember Jim Laletta?
He'd go, right before you go on, he'd go, "Don't say and." He'd do stuff like, "Don't say and." I say that.
Oh, yeah. He was. Okay. Can't recall I ever got lambasted for going over the light doing stand-up, but one time at Nick's, he was the headliner, and he ripped me because I tried out this bit where I brought somebody from the audience on stage. And it's like, I thought that he was a little over the line with how angry he got at the time. However, yeah. Looking back, it makes sense. You don't want somebody to bring, like, you don't want to bring the audience on stage, really. He wanted a heads up. He thought, oh man, I couldn't, after you do that, I can't get them back in it. But I was just trying to kill.
Yeah, you're just trying to be funny.
Yeah, I was trying to not make him mad.
Yeah, but... he was trying to, yeah.
It had the opposite effect.
I'm trying to make people laugh.
I was trying so hard and I failed because he was
did it work though when mad. You brought some when the
Yeah, and I think so in the moment I was shocked that he was angry at me. I was like, I it killed. But he was more thinking about himself. Dane Train started at Nick's.
Yeah.
Dane Cook, great first choice. I'm going to go, okay, my pick. I'm going to go with a guy that a lot of people go to when they talk about Boston comedy. He's a guy that, he's one of the only guys that could compete with Dane Cook in terms of drawing an audience, I feel like, and in terms of name recognition, and that's Jay Leno.
Wow.
I mean, he's from Andover. Yeah. Maybe a lot of people don't think about him in terms of Boston comedy, but I know the people in Boston kind of count him as their own.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, I'll go with Leno.
That's a good one, Leno. Well, John Stone, I admire you.
All right, we're doing a starting five. So you pick, okay, Leno and Dane. Those are our centers.
Okay. Okay, so power. We're going power forward next or guards?
And I mean, listen, we're talking about big names. There's a lot of classic guys like, you know, Kenny Rogerson, those type of guys who maybe don't make the starting five. But anyway, let's continue
I'm
this
just
draft.
Trying to,
I like
yeah.
this. I don't want to keep you forever, too, by the way.
No, it's okay. Whatever. I'm enjoying myself. I don't talk to people. All right, so who I'm trying to think of like there's so many like there's obvious names, right? I guess I'm gonna go Stephen Wright. Stephen Wright, because that guy put Boston on the map.
Oh, definitely. I mean, one of the most legendary Boston comedy stories that people love to tell is how he was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and they like rolled out a TV, a Catch a Rising Star. They're like, we had one TV and we bought it for that occasion.
It's a black and white, yeah, little black and white TV.
No one would do that now. It's because they had three channels back then. It was like 100 million people were watching The Tonight Show.
Yeah, because there's no, right, you couldn't go on YouTube the next day and how did they live back then?
Sometimes I miss it. I wish there was like no cell phones, just a landline.
I still have old notebooks, right, little date books and names in the back with their numbers.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was like valuable. Yep. Like I'm like, oh, I got Robbie Prince's number.
I still have business cards from, I collect, like, I don't know, I never threw anything away. And I have business cards from people. I have like, I met Dimitri Martin.
Wait, that's so weird. I was just going to say, I recently threw out a bunch of business cards because I moved and one of them was Dimitri Martin.
Oh, it was? Oh, that's crazy.
Go ahead.
He wrote down on a piece of paper his name and number. So it's like, and this is from years ago when I lived in New York, and I saw him when he started out too. I saw all these guys. I saw so many guys start out, and now I'm like, they're all famous.
Oh, I know, man. I mean, when that first happened, I mean, that's like a mind fuck, right? I mean, you're talking about guys like Dane and Patrice. It's like, yeah, it's just crazy.
Like I've saw so many guys that are famous their first times on stage. You know what I mean? Like I saw so many guys perform their early sets and when they were like, they were totally not who they are.
Yeah.
You know, you saw them find their voice and then one night you go in, you see them and all of a sudden they're killing and you're like, wow.
There's just this weird thing where somebody's just, you know, a regular comic and then the next minute they're selling out Madison Square Garden. I don't know. It's kind of weird.
It is weird. And it's like not, and there's not really much difference. It's so subtle, the difference from, you know, them being in a club, you seeing them in a really small situation. Small, you know, like trying to think of the words here.
Because you know what I mean? Like, in a club, like
in a club situation, I guess
there's really something to comedy in like a small place under like, you know, 200 people versus in those big arenas, because in the big arenas, it loses some magic.
Yeah. I'm talking like, I've done so many arenas, you know, it's.
I just think it's like a comedy club. If you're going to build the ideal comedy club, it seats like 1 to 200 people. There's low ceilings. It feels like a very intimate room.
Yeah.
And when somebody's killing, everyone is like keeled over laughing, experiencing the same rush of like seeing a guy kill. Whereas if you're in like an arena, and again, I could tell from like personal experience,
like the Conti Forum, and the casino, the Hampton Beach casino is
Yeah, by the I will be back at the Hampton Beach Casino soon, and I am running a weekly open mic out of Conti Forum in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. We draw about 1,200 people a week.
Who are you going to open for at Hampton Beach
Casino? I think I was invited back. Oh, wait.
Yeah,
I'm having flashbacks. I was invited back after Casey and the Sunshine Band. That's almost the funniest part of it. I bombed so hard that the crowd at Casey and the Sunshine Band were not only booing me, they started chanting, Casey, Casey. Oh, and then, like probably 3 months later, I get asked to go back there, and it was like a Lucy Loveless show. It was like a country show.
And they're like, yeah, we heard about you.
The country band was like, we got to have them.
We got to have them. They're going to be chanting for us. Set about 7 minutes into this comedian set.
Like, you haven't seen a crowd so happy to see your music than the one that has to suffer through Greg Johnson before you.
Yeah.
Dude.
That's like, you're going to take pride in that, you know, like, yeah, you know what? You're not going to have more happier fans than you're about to see you by the time I get done. Be ready. Just be ready to go on.
Yeah, I show up at the venue. They're like, do exactly the same set you did last time.
Yeah.
They're like, we need you to bomb even harder if possible. The bigger the bomb, the better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude. Okay, so far. Excuse me. We got Dane Cook. Your team is Dane Cook and Stephen Wright. I got Leno. And here's my second pick. Boston stand-up comedy draft. This is a big one. Joe Rogan. Ooh. Wasn't he a Boston guy?
He was.
I mean, there's probably no bigger draw in the world right now. I don't know what his audience, like, I feel like his audience gets exaggerated. I don't listen to his pod. I don't care. But I know that he's a very popular comedian, obviously. Joe Rogan, shout out.
Yeah, that's a good one, man. I mean, I remember when he used to do Nick's, hanging out. I hung out one night. Dominic's is this place across the street from, it's not there anymore, I don't think. It was a pizza place. It was a pizza and they had a bar. And basically all like after hours, all the, there would like pimps be hanging out, prostitutes, like every walk of life would be at this place. It was one of them. It was the best place on earth. They had great pizza, good slices. And you never know, you just never know, like, who you're going to run into there.
Yeah.
And we used to go, and when you work Nick's, you know, you'd go, all the comics used to go over there. And I remember him writing that bit, remember that bit he did about when that show Life Goes On, when that, if that gets canceled? Do you remember him doing that bit?
No, I don't remember.
Oh.
If it gets canceled, like,
The guy Corky, the guy that plays Corky, like his reaction.
So afraid. Classic Rogan.
It was classic Rogan.
I can't believe my team right now is Leno and Rogan. I don't know. I would have to pick.
You got Leno and Rogan? That was a good pick.
I got Leno and Rogan. You got Dane and Steve Wright. Who's your next one? Let's go. Legends of Boston Comedy.
Legends of Boston Comedy. I'll go Burr.
Nice one. That was gonna be mine. I mean, talk about a guy who's been funny forever, and now he like sells out Red Rocks.
Yeah, he does an arena. Talk about arenas.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Like, for a while, he was the guy you were rooting for because he never got his just due. And now, I mean, I'm not saying he even gets his just due. I think he does very well for himself, though. He's a legend, that guy.
Big time. One of the hardest working guys. I remember another guy that I just remember hanging out at the clubs in you know, in the early 90s when you started doing it. I think I remember the first time he was at the club at Stitches, just kind of lurking about by himself.
Amazing.
You know, and you didn't talk, you really didn't talk to anybody if they were new back then, right? Yeah. You just kind of like, you waited till they got on stage and like, what are these guys, what do they got? And he had like this one joke, you know, because that joke, the early joke about, because he was a dental hygienist in you know, 20 years of neglect, a tic-tac doesn't, I'm not doing the joke justice, but you know,
yeah,
a tic-tac doesn't cure 20 years of neglect. And, right. It was just a funny bit. And like after that, it's like, oh, okay, this guy. And then you know, people talk to him, you know. I think if he bombed, you wouldn't really, yeah.
I know. I've had that, like, especially like the few times I've performed in LA, it's just like a phenomenon where like I'm talking to people afterwards and then I'm like, oh yeah, they were completely ignoring me before I went on stage and did well.
Yeah.
And then they're just like so nice to you.
Yeah.
After they see that you do well. Anyway, Bill Burr.
If you're funny, yeah.
Yeah, which I always am, so. Except for when I opened for Casey and such, I've been. And, yeah, Shauna Na in 2000.
That's who you're going to open for next, Shauna Na.
Coming out of retirement, I'm opening for Shauna Na at the Conti Forum.
Nice.
I guess my next pick, this is going to get hard because I have three more picks, you have two more picks. I'm going to go with Dennis Leary. He's just a guy that's been iconic Boston for a long time. I think at his height, he was probably selling out big theaters. I don't know what he's doing now. I don't think he's doing stand-up now. Now I'm feeling bad about picking him because wasn't he had a bad reputation around these parts. But regardless of that, Dennis Leary, icon, I'm putting him on my team.
Yeah, I think there was some friction about stealing jokes early on, but I think the parties in question squashed it eventually. Yeah. So, but that's a good pick. I mean, I remember those spots on MTV, him smoking cigarette stuff.
Yeah. That was so popular. Again, it goes back to that was the advent of cable TV. So a lot of people watched MTV.
My next pick, it's going to blow your mind, Greg.
I can't wait.
David Cross.
Oh! That's a great one.
David Cross.
Dude, I love David Cross so much. I could talk about it a lot, but I love that guy. He's a killer comic. People think he's like a certain way, but then when you see him do stand-up, I think you get a different impression of him, and yeah, he's the greatest. You know, David Cross had a dog that I think he named Red Sox, and he told me it was so... when he lived in New York City, whenever he had to leave the dog park, he could be like, come on, Red Sox. It's pretty funny. And he's serious too. Like,
that's great.
It's like something I followed up on him every time I'd see him. And he'd be like, yeah, no, that's real. So
that's hilarious.
Kind of funny. Yeah. That's killer. David, oh shit.
Cross comedy, man. What?
Yeah. That was like John Benjamin,
Sam Cedar.
Oh yeah.
I think Gustus was in that for a little bit.
Man, like, I'm at a loss for who to pick. Like, I guess, I don't know. Maybe I'll go for my next pick. I think, jeez. Lenny Clark.
Good one.
I mean, you just got to pick Lenny Clark at some point. He's such an icon of the region, an icon of stand-up comedy. I mean, I don't know, man. Lenny Clark's interesting because I've watched some of his sets, like the ones from the Young Comedian special.
Yeah.
HBO, and it hasn't aged that well. But anyway, it's really great to have him on my team.
He's a good acquisition.
I was tempted to pick Joe List.
Ooh, that's a...
Because, I mean, Joe, I mean, today, Joe certainly draws, certainly got a great career going.
Maybe the maybe our last pick we should pick from that generation.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, like there's Listy, Kaplan.
Oh yeah, NYQ Kaplan.
Yep, Kaplan.
Dude, you know what's funny? You mentioned Soder. I got a text message like 3 weeks ago, and he goes, "I'm listening to some show that Dan Soder has. Oh, it's called The Bonfire. Is that on your radar?
The Bonfire."
Yeah, I think it's Dan Soder and it's Big J Okerson. Is this on your radar?
I've heard of this. Yeah, there was a falling out, right?
Oh, maybe. I don't even know. The thing that the piece of information I got is this guy I know was listening to The Bonfire and he heard Joe List on there doing my bit. He was quoting me. He was shouting me out. He was complimenting me, according to this guy. So there's it's nothing but love there. And then the guy sent me the clip and I was like, I don't even want to listen to this. In fact, I don't want to even know that someone's doing my bit on The Bonfire. Lose my number. No, I didn't get that harsh with him, but I, you know, what am I to make of that? I mean, it's nice that Joe would shout me out. So
I think that's,
thanks for that. Very nice.
That's flattery. I mean, I think that's respect for you, for your comment.
Thank you. Thank you.
Although, I don't think he knows about the Hampton Beach Casino gig. If he had, or maybe that was the clincher. You know, it was like.
That's great. Joe List is a good member of the team.
Yeah, Joe List.
I actually have one guy I haven't mentioned. He'll be my last pick, I guess. You have two more picks, though.
I do. I thought I had one.
Oh yeah, you have one more. One more. Sorry.
All right. I'm trying to think of from that ilk, that generation of lists.
It's hard. Yeah, it's like.
There's Joe, there's Kaplan, there's Shane Moss. Who did. Well, you know what? I mean, there's Gullman.
Yeah, Gullman's a great pick.
I'm going to go with Gully. I'm going to go with Gullman. Because all these guys had their moment, and I think that Gullman worked really hard over the years, and then like just a few years ago with that great Depression that special he had on HBO, I think that was like his moment, and that's propelled him to the next level. You know what I mean? And it's like you can't, like, as far as stand-ups go. So consistent with his material, his voice, you know, it's so distinct, you know, and it's so much fun. You just love listening to the guy. And he's like that. Dude. He's like that offstage too. He's just like a genuine dude.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The greatest, the greatest guy. Shout out Gullman. I think we're full. I think our teams are full. You had Cross, Gullman, Kevin Knox, Bill Burr, Stephen Wright, and Dane Cook.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty much a flawless draft by you, Tony. That's a stunning lineup and pantheon of Boston stand-up comedy legends. You wouldn't want to miss that show.
I think you have one more pick.
I have one more pick. Yeah. And, you know, there's so many guys we haven't mentioned.
There's a ton. Of
Boston comedy legends. And it depends on how you're judging these teams. You judge by different criteria. There's so many nominees, like Steve Sweeney and Sweeney. But I can't think of any. Sweeney and Sweeney. But I want to put Eugene Merman on there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Here's why. I mean, it's actually obvious why. Eugene Merman, undeniable killer comedian. And I think he was one of a kind in Boston around 2000. He would destroy all the time. Same within New York. And he was unique. He seemed to broaden the spectrum of what a Boston comedian could be. All that stuff. And he's the star of one of the most beloved TV shows of all time, Bob's Burgers, where he plays a character based on him, named after him, performed by him, written for him. He's basically Bart Simpson 2.0. He is iconic. Eugene Merman, gotta be on my team. He's the best. Honorable mention, Steve Sweeney.
Wow, so to recap, here's my team, and I think I got you beat, Tony. It's Lenny Clark and Eugene Merman. Naturally, they'll bunk well together. Dennis Leary, Joe Rogan, and Jay Leno.
That's a good starting five right there.
It's going to be quite a tour bus. That's quite a torgasm, if you will.
Torgasm.